Welcome to the Westside Investors Network, WIN, your community of investing knowledge for growth. This is the Real Estate Professionals Investing Podcast for real estate professionals by real estate professionals. This show is focused on the next step in your career, investing. Thank you for listening. And please, if you like our content, rate us on your podcast provider. Just a quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are for educational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any shares or securities, make or consider any investments or take any other action.
Welcome back to another episode of the Deal Deep Dive segment on the Westside Investors Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Werner. In this segment, our featured guests will share their unique stories on a specific deal they've invested in. We will dive deep into finding the deal, financing the deal, writing an offer, and the due diligence. Do us a solid and smash that subscribe button, leave us a rating, and share this episode. And now, let's dive deep. Welcome back to the Westside Investors Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Werner. On today's Deal Deep Dive episode, we are joined by Ryan Emrich of Blue Canyon Equity Partners. Today, Ryan's going to share about his finance and accounting background and how that's helped form Blue Canyon Equity Partners and grow it into what they are today. We're going to talk about his first partnership deal that's a 6-unit multifamily property in Massachusetts and where he's taken Blue Canyon Equity Partners since that first deal. Now let's welcome Ryan Emrich. Ryan Emrich joining us from Boston on the Westside Investors Network today. We're stoked to hear about your finance background, parlaying that into a real estate career, as well as the birth and development of Blue Canyon Equity Partners. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Trent. It's a pleasure to be here today. Looking forward to speaking to your audience.
We're excited to have you. So, Ryan, you, like a lot of other real estate investors, started in the finance industry. Tell me a little bit more about your finance background and career.
Yeah, sure. So I started off in public accounting, got my CPA license, and I quickly knew I did not want to be in public accounting for too long. So I left, started working at a tech company. And it was around 2018 where I started thinking about if I was really providing the most value to myself. I was like, what's my path to becoming a millionaire? What's my path to growing my net worth? And while I know you could do it in theory in accounting and finance, I just felt like that was going to be a really slow path to get there. So I started talking with a friend from my public accounting days, and he also wanted to do something, I think, a little entrepreneurial. So we started talking, and we were originally thinking like maybe a business or going into some type of franchise system where it's like a proven business model. But we ultimately landed on real estate. And as I'm sure you and a lot of your audience knows, there's a lot of awesome ways to get into real estate with a low down payment, like the FHA loans. Now there's the 5% conventional loan. And so that just seemed like the next best path forward for us. So that's what we started doing. At the end of 2018, we started looking at multifamilies. We did start looking in Boston, but you know, it was really hard to make the numbers work, especially being so high leveraged. And so we ended up 1 hour west of Boston in New England's second largest city, Worcester, Massachusetts. And that's where we took down our first property and we used an FHA loan to do that.
Awesome. And are you still in your finance background today or are you full-time real estate?
So I left my full-time W-2 job toward the end of 2022. And I was then doing contract finance work full-time, and I've since dialed that back to now part-time. So I'm doing about 15 hours a week for a tech company that I used to work for, purely 1099 contract position. And I'm really trying to focus on building the real estate empire, so to speak, with my now investing partners at Blue Canyon Equity Partners.
Awesome. And before Blue Canyon, I'm assuming you were investing in some capacity yourself or with partners on a smaller scale?
Yeah. So what happened and kind of how the Blue Canyon group came about was after those first couple of properties I bought in Worcester, Massachusetts, me and my business partner at the time, we kind of sat on those and we were trying to think about what our next steps forward were. We ended up having a falling out and a disagreement on where to take the business, but I knew I still wanted to kind of grow the portfolio. And so I was thinking about now that I had equity in this FHA owner-occupied property, like what was the best way for me to use that equity? Should I try to take some of that equity out and go do another house hack? Or was there a better way to use that money to scale? And so I started learning about commercial multifamily real estate, specifically how commercial real, I mean, there's a lot of, by the way, what would you call it? There's a lot of asset classes in commercial real estate. So commercial multifamily is just one of those asset classes, but there's also self-storage, mobile home parks, et cetera. But ultimately, I was recognizing that the way commercial real estate is valued is a little differently than how residential properties 2 to 4 units are valued. Specifically how, if you like look at an appraisal report, you'll see on there that for 2 to 4 unit properties, they're usually looking at the sales comparison approach. So they're looking at similar properties that have sold nearby. And so it doesn't necessarily matter if you make your property more profitable, produce more income, it's not necessarily going to make it worth more money. And so I was keeping that in front of mind, where on the other side of things, commercial real estate, I was recognizing if I do make a property more profitable, like we had done with those first couple of properties, it could make it more valuable in the eyes of an appraiser or a bank, the next investor. So I realized that there might've been a path forward at that time. This is around 2021. I realized there's a path forward to potentially burr a property that was commercial multifamily, so 5+ units. And so started going to some networking events. I really wanted to grow my network at that time. Met two gentlemen at one of like the first networking events, and we did a mastermind together because we had some similar goals. And one of my goals in the mastermind was to try to target value add off market commercial multifamily building. So I started sending direct mailers to a list that I had scraped from like PropStream or something like that. And by the end of 2021 into 2022, I was starting to get leads. And we were also starting to wind down the mastermind. And at that time, somebody proposed, hey, we seem to have some good synergy here. Let's partner together. Let's create Blue Canyon Equity Partners and let's go tackle our first deal. So that's what we did. We found a property just northwest of Boston, about 1 hour outside of Boston. It was a 6-unit apartment building. We found it off market through a direct mailer. And we decided to pursue that property as our first deal as Blue Canyon Equity Partners.
Awesome. I want to step back for a second and kind of dive into something that you mentioned, and it's the whole strategy, or I guess technique, of the different appraisal approaches.
Yeah.
A personal story. We had a 4-unit that, you know, we put $200,000 into, renovated every unit, doubled the rents, and there was nothing in the area that it sold. And so they appraised it for like $40,000 less than what we were all in at.
Yeah.
So we had to go get a commercial loan on a fourplex because they would allow the income approach. And, you know, there's a whole lot of different variables that went into play there. But that was when I learned about, why would I mess around with residential financing unless I know the comps are going to support it, whatever. But I love how you talked about, we got to go for 5+ units, because I know that if I get the income to here and the cap rates stay here, it's going to be worth this. I think a lot of people maybe don't realize that right out the gate, which it sounds like you kind of realized early on in your career.
Yeah, I was fortunate to kind of catch on to that a couple of years into investing. At the very beginning, I didn't realize that. And I will say, those owner-occupied products, loan products, residential products, they have a place. Because if you are like where I was and you don't have a lot of money saved up, it's hard to kind of get into the bigger asset classes, because you probably will need 20 to 25%, or you're going to have to go find a money partner, which could be tough if you don't have a demonstrated track record.
Right.
So for me, it made sense to get into residential, use the owner-occupied, get some equity, and get some knowledge. But then once I had that, then I said, okay, like, now what's the most bang for my buck here? How can I really take that equity and leverage it to scale quickly as possible, but like in a relatively safe manner? And kind of just like you pointed out, within the commercial real estate space, because of how it's valued based on the income, and you're using capitalization rates, which is effectively just a multiplier on the net operating income to determine the approximate value of that building in the fair open market. Because you can kind of roughly calculate that, you have an idea, okay, if I buy for X, I put in Y dollars and it's producing Z income, what's going to be my approximate fair market value? And kind of like you were saying, it's not as easy to do that when it's 2 to 4 units, because if you don't have a comp in the marketplace, your appraiser, you know, they may not give you a good appraisal. So Yeah. You're kind of taking a bit of a gamble there. I think there's a little bit more like science and math to back up the commercial real estate space.
So let's talk about this 6-unit deal, northwest of Boston. You found it off market through direct mail. What did you purchase the property for?
So we originally had it under contract for $560,000, but we realized as we were starting to do due diligence and the seller was opening up that there was a problem tenant in the building, and it didn't seem like they were paying rent, or they seemed like they'd be difficult if we wanted to try to get them out of the building. So that allowed us to retrade. And so we ended up retrading for like $530,000. So our actual purchase price on this was $530,000. And then we also knew we wanted to do cosmetic updates to the units. This was kind of part of our business plan. The units, while they weren't totally depressed, so to speak, they could use a little life. They needed some cosmetic updates. And we knew if we did those, that we'd greatly increase our chances of maximizing market rents when we went to go rent those units. So we kind of budgeted about $75,000 to do those. But we had to decide where we wanted to get that money from. I mean, we could have gone to the bank and asked for a construction loan, although that was probably going to increase our down payment requirement at the time from 20 to 25%. We had the option to bring the money ourselves. But we also knew there were people within our network who were interested in investing in real estate in some capacity, but maybe they didn't want to be a landlord themselves. And so we found somebody who was willing to lend us the $75,000 at 8% interest. We got a promissory note with them. And that's what we decided to do. And so we purchased this building. Most of the money came from the bank. We got this secondary loan through the promissory note. And we started attacking that business plan. We went in there. We started increasing the rents for the units that were vacant on the day of closing. We just immediately started kind of doing the cosmetic updates to those. And then as the rents were increasing and some tenants naturally couldn't afford it, you know, we worked out a situation to make sure that they had adequate amount of time to move on, get their affairs in order. But then we did the cosmetic updates on those. And so within a year, we were able to take the rents from somewhere around $4,000 up to like $8,500. And then at that point, we said, okay, we think we've made this sufficiently more profitable. Let's go back to the bank. Let's see if we can do a cash out refinance, kind of completing the burst strategy, right? Buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. We want to do that refinance part now. So we go back to the bank. We asked them to do an appraisal. We did feel the appraisal came in a little low. And I think that the rising interest rate environment in mid-2023 was probably, you know, played a little bit of a role in that, but it still accomplished what we needed it to do because the appraisal came back at $810,000. That allowed us to pull out $183,000. And that $183,000 was enough to cover our down payment of $106,000 plus paying back the promissory note of $75,000. So we had a couple K left over, but it wasn't, you know, material. But ultimately, we accomplished the goal. We proved that we could burr a commercial multifamily asset because there's some value add component to it. And so now we then took that and we said, all right, we've proven we can do it. Can we go do this on a bigger deal now? Or, you know, what happens if we want to buy something that's bigger? Can we raise the money for it? Because of course, you know, if you keep burring, yes, you can go buy more property, but it's harder to buy property that's multiples more expensive because there's limited capital there. So then the following year, and I don't know if you want me to get me, do you want me to go into any more deals or are you good with the one?
Well, no, I'm interested. I want to keep rolling, but I do have a question about this, you know, the six unit. So yeah. You went through the cosmetic updates, you ran your business plan. For mm-hmm. that construction loan, did you bring that person in as a partner or was that strictly an additional loan and you only kept your initial partnership going?
We only kept the initial partnership going. That was strictly an additional loan. So that was, they didn't have a lien on the property or anything. That was something that me and my partners personally guaranteed. It was actually, I think, a family member of one of the partners. So it was somebody that we knew. It wasn't like a random person off the street, but it was just a promissory note. We guaranteed the notes personally. And we felt really good because we knew on day one, we were probably buying this asset with equity in the deal. So that was already like, we bought it for $530,000. I think very easily, we probably could have just put it on the market for $600,000. So it felt good there. We knew that there was this value add component to it where we could boost the income and then go back to the bank and, you know, get it either a cash or refinance. If that didn't work out or we couldn't pull out as much as we needed to, we could have probably gone to our own pockets to cover paying back the promissory note or just using the cash flow or refinanced out of the promissory note and got a new promissory note. And then worst case scenario, we would have had to sell the asset and we would have made money, but then we wouldn't have owned the asset anymore. So that's why I really like the burst strategy because you can keep the asset, still get cash flow, which is nice, exactly. And then get your capital back.
And so when you were kind of underwriting this deal from the get-go, I know there's six units. How old is the property?
How old was it? This is probably built in the early 1900s. So everything in New England, by the way, if it's not new construction, it's very common to get things built in the late 1800s, early 1900s. So I know for some parts of the country that might sound crazy, but we're used to seeing it here. So they're older buildings and they've usually had like two, maybe three, like really extensive infrastructure updates over their lifetime. It kind of just depends on where you're buying it in the life cycle.
So older building, six units, was your plan initially with that $75,000 construction budget, was that to do all six units or were you going to leave a couple unrenovated as long as the tenants were just accepting the rent increases? What was your plan going into it?
Yeah, I like that question. So our plan was we knew two or three of the units needed some good facelifts. So, but they were occupied at the time. So we said, okay, you know what? Worst case scenario, those two or three that need everything, like day one, for some reason, they turn over or within the first year, they turn over and we've got enough money to do it. A few of the other units, they needed lighter stuff, maybe just like fresh paint, a little deferred maintenance. So we knew we probably would have some cash flow once we took care of the more extensive units. to cover those ones. So we weren't as worried. If I to answer kind of just point blankly say no, you know, 75K certainly would not have been enough to do full cosmetic updates to all six units, but we knew it was enough to get us going in the right path and then get us to a place where we had cash flow. So I think we did, so in the first year, I want to say we turned over 1, 2, 3, 4 units where we did a couple that were more extensive, couple that were light on the lighter side. And then a couple of the tenants actually stayed with the rent increases. We didn't go full to market, but we went pretty close to it. And, you know, they didn't have anything better in the area that they could go to. So it made sense for them to stay.
And I think that's the reason I asked that is because I've had deals that I've done where, you know, it's fourplex and I've renovated two of the units and then immediately gone back to the bank, and it accomplishes what you're trying to do with a BRRRR. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of people think you have to just renovate everything 100% in order for the BRRRR to work. But in your case, you know, four of the six units renovated and it accomplished everything that you needed it to. You didn't have to wait for those other two units to turn over, renovate them. You were able to get what you needed out of it by doing 66% of the doors, right?
Yep.
So
yep,
that's totally something true. That a lot of people overlook when it comes to the, you know, the goal of getting that refinance done. You don't have to go 100% in order to do it. And you're usually able to get that refi quicker and accomplish the same goal as, you know, unless compared to if you waited to do the other, you know, all 100% of the units and then refinance. Yeah, it might appraise for more, but, you know, what goal are you trying to accomplish? In your case, it was getting the loan paid back. Obviously, you the partners, you know, made whole or close to it, and then go and snowball this and do another deal.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Trent, because it's true. I mean, we kind of gave ourselves this 1 year timeline, and I think we wanted to say, okay, we'll do as much as we can accomplish in that 1 year. But we didn't want to force turnover where we didn't need to. If we can get rent increases, that's kind of going right in alignment with what we were trying to do. We were trying to increase the income for the building. And if we can avoid spending money to turn over a unit, heck, we'll do it, you know? So that ideal situation was we could increase all the rents and people would stay, but we knew that wasn't going to be the case. We knew there's naturally going to be some turnover. So it worked out. And in 1 year, we got, I think, 4 of the units turned over. And you're exactly right. That accomplished ultimately the business plan. We were able to get our money out and kind of go on to bigger and better things.
So one more question about this deal. When you were analyzing it, underwriting it, you know, doing your due diligence, and you put your business plan together, what was your intentions? Obviously, it sounded like you were intending on refinancing it and pulling capital out, but how long were you intending on holding it, or are you intending on holding it? And has that changed because you were able to get that refinance done, you know, in the first couple of years?
Yeah. So me and my partners, we were aligned. We were realizing we were aligned when we were doing the mastermind before we had bought anything together, that we were all buy and hold investors. So I think we're all in this for the long term. And I think in our heads, we were at least like, okay, if we can keep a building forever, that's awesome. And if we can make it more profitable, get more cash flow, or put it in a situation where we think can then do a cash out refinance, that's debt or tax-free cash coming to you, then that's awesome, right? You get your money out, or you get even bonus money out. You get to keep the asset and continues to cash flow and appreciate.
And now here's a word from our sponsor.
Get things done while you're on the move. Learn more about working with a virtual assistant through Offsite Professionals. It's a great way to get all the things done that you need to get done. Have freedom in your time and streamline your life by automating your business. Stop spending time on the tasks that you can delegate and start spending more time on your superpower. Call us today at 503-446-3177 or visit our website at offsiteprofessionals.com.
Uptown Syndication is now offering a syndication coaching program for you to take your real estate portfolio to the next level. This is your opportunity to have experienced syndicators, AJ and Chris Shepard, coach you on your way to controlling your real estate investing future. Our coaching program will provide you with the tools and framework needed to begin syndicating real estate in your target market. Go to uptownsyndication.com today to learn more.
So we knew that we wanted to keep the asset. We knew we wanted to get it to a point where it was going to produce more income. And we strongly felt, we didn't know with 100% certainty, but we strongly felt that we, within a year, could get it to a place where we could do a cash out refinance. There's certainly always going to be risks in the market. Like, you don't know where interest rates are going to go. You don't know where cap rates are going to go. So it's not a guarantee that we were going to be able to do that. And like I said, if we weren't able to, I'm sure there was a way that we could have figured out how to pay off the promissory note, either between our own resources or doing a partial cash out refinance or refinancing that promissory note with another investor. But it ended up working out in our situation because the market kind of stayed steady the interest rates increase, like I said, a little bit, but ultimately it's held steady. You know, the rents continue to go up. So from day one, I think we just wanted to make sure we were in a position where if we're going to put money into the building, that our purchase price plus our rehab costs was going to be significantly less than what the market value of the building was going to be. I think that was just, we wanted to make sure that that's where we were so that we knew we would be, you know, solvent and have good equity in the building should we ever need to sell. Beyond that, our due diligence was really just making sure that the rents that we thought we were underwriting for were going to be accurate. Like, you know, we checked around with a couple of property managers at other buildings just to see what they were getting rents for comparable units. And then we dove into the expenses a little bit more, went to the city to check, you know, water and sewer historical records, asked for utility bills from the seller to verify some of the utilities they were saying they were covering. Everything for the most part checked out. There were no huge surprises there. The only surprise was just ensuring, well, I should say the tenants. We weren't totally sure with one of the tenants, like I had mentioned. I think at first they were presented as being a normal tenant that was paying, but we kind of realized that they were a disgruntled tenant, but that we were at risk of potentially inheriting somebody that maybe wanted to sue us or something like that. But we ultimately worked out a situation where we got that tenant out of the building, did a little cash for key situation, and we got a price reduction. So it was actually, we kind of double dipped into the pot a little bit, and there's a little bit more to the story there, but it ultimately worked to our favor. So, and I guess I will just say, so one of the things we did is we said, okay, listen, we'll take it with the disgruntled tenant, but and we'll pay cash, but we want a price reduction. So we said we'd effectively waive our financing contingency. And our intent was to actually go use a hard money lender. That's what we were going to do. But because we had so much flexibility on the closing date, we had enough time that we could still go to a bank and try to get a normal loan on it. So that's what we did. We able to get the price down a little bit, saying that we were going to go in with a cash offer or waiving the financing contingency, but we still got our financing approved through the bank. So we knew we couldn't use that to back out of the deal if it didn't get approved, but it ended up getting approved. So we ended up getting way cheaper financing, right? Rather than paying like 10 or 12% with hard money, we were paying, I think at the time, like 4.8% that's where the rates were at the bank we went through. So that was nice. And then that tenant ended up wanting to leave before closing anyway. That kind of just worked out nicely. And so the seller ended up offering a cash for key situation to that tenant. So it really ended up working out well for us. And I think the seller was relatively happy because he got rid of the property and he got rid of a problem tenant that he didn't want to deal with.
And let's talk about the whole idea of, you know, you're able to close cash if you have to, but yeah, with closing being whenever it was, you had time to go get conventional or FHA financing on it. And so you explored that option of being able to get better rates, you know, FHA loan on it, all that fun stuff. But like you said, you waived your financing contingency. So if that loan was, for whatever reason, fell through or couldn't be done, you always knew that you could go get hard money. You know, you had that in your back pocket in case you were able to make it work. And like I said, if for whatever reason the FHA loan couldn't go through, you still knew that you could close on the deal. You weren't going to lose earnest money. You weren't going to blow the deal up over what kind of money you were using to pay for it. And I think having those options in a deal like this, I don't know, it would have freed me up knowing that I could go do either option at the end of the day to make sure that this deal closed, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as I'm sure like a lot of listeners recognize that when an investor goes to make a cash offer, it's not necessarily that they're coming out of pocket with the actual cash, like they have it in their bank account. They might be still just going to another lender who's more liquid and is able to close quicker. So that would be like a hard money lender. And so that's what we said. We said, okay, yeah, we'll buy in cash, but we knew we didn't have the $550,000 that we were going to scrape together. We were going to go get the vast majority of that, just like we would have done from a bank, but from a hard money lender. And we knew we could close that way. And we knew we only needed 1 week time for the hard money lender to do their thing, to underwrite the deal, to get it appraised, and to close on it. So we said, okay, if we've got 5 or 6 weeks to close, let's go use 4 or 5 of those weeks to just go to a normal bank where we knew we were going to get better terms and see if that'll work out. And that worked out. It worked out like easily. I think in 3 weeks, they approved it. So, because it was a good deal. Like I said, there was equity on day one. There is a value add deal. I think everybody recognized, all parties involved in the transaction, maybe even the seller, but certainly us as the buyers and the bank and the appraiser, they recognized there was a good deal there with some equity in it. So I think it was safe for everyone.
So obviously you had a great first deal. You're able to pull capital out. Where did that take you guys with the partnership going forward, and where are you guys at now with your portfolio, and what do you plan on doing 2024, 2025?
Yeah. So After that was 2022, and then into 2023, we bought that in 2022, that 6 unit, and into 2023 is when we did the cash out refinance. Also, at the beginning of 2023, we got another lead for a portfolio in another town. It's actually a city south of Boston, 1 hour, New Bedford, Massachusetts. And it was a 65 unit portfolio made up of 12 buildings. And the seller of the portfolio, it was actually somebody that had passed away, but as part of the winding down of their estate, they were required to sell the portfolio. So this wasn't being openly shopped by like a broker. This was being shopped by the interim property manager and their family. They had received my letter. And so I was like one of a couple investors that got to take a look at this. So me and the Blue Canyon crew, we decided that this would be an awesome deal to do our first real estate syndication on. So we actually did a 506B syndication on this in 2023. We hired a securities attorney. They filed documents with the SEC. You know, there were certain things that we had to comply with. And then we partnered with one of our mentors to help kind of get this deal done. I think we knew we could do the deal, but there was a lot of moving components and we had never done a syndication before. So we wanted to partner with somebody who had done a syndication before. So together we were able to raise the $1.8 million that we needed for the down payment and for the starting operating costs. I think all the total deal was like $5.7 million. So it wasn't something where we could take our funds from the BRRRR we had done a couple months prior and just roll that in to buy this deal. You know, we definitely were going to need more capital than that. So that's where our syndication seemed to make sense for us, where we could go to a lot of little investors, passive investors, purely coming in to put their money in it. They're expecting some type of return, but they're not going to have a say in the deal type of situation. So that made sense for us. We closed that deal in August of 2023, and we've been going through the stabilization process of that portfolio. And we actually realized that there was a good opportunity to sell some of the smaller buildings in the portfolio because there was some trapped equity. Again, this is value add. On day one, we had equity in the deal. So we just quickly did some light cosmetic things to those units just to get them rent ready for the next owner, if they were going to be owner occupied or whatnot. And we sold off a couple of those assets. And we're going to do a couple more this year as well. So it's a great way for us to recognize some of that equity that's built into those properties, return capital to investors, return preferred returns back to investors, and maybe even some profits. So that's been a great experience as well. So that was kind of like the 2023 into 2024. And then we were recognizing that, all right, so we've got these longer term deals. These are kind of the buy and hold like I was talking about, and it seems to be our bread and butter. But one of my business partners, John Marchese, he's got an extensive experience in construction and remodeling and things like that. He's got a development business. He's got a kitchen and home remodeling business. And so, because of that, by the way, that's one of the reasons I've always felt very comfortable with this particular team tackling projects where there is some rehab component, because I know we've got a contractor on the team. I know we've got some good resources. But we also have people in our network who are like, hey, I'm interested in investing in real estate, but I don't necessarily want to invest for, you know, 1, 2, 3 years before I get my money back. Do you have any shorter term projects? And so we decided in 2024, it made sense for us to start looking at flips or condo conversions, where you take like a 2 unit or 3 unit and just convert it to condominiums, do some renovations. And those are projects that are typically going to be around 6 months. So we are looking to get under contract our first deal right now. We've got an offer accepted. We think we've got the terms for the P&S ready. This would be something we'd be using hard money for. So we're excited to use hard money. We're excited to, you know, present this to kind of the people in our network who want to partner with us on a deal like this. And it's actually a really nice, well, right now it doesn't look nice. It's a hoarder home. It's a proper hoarder home. There's a ton of junk in there. And the person that lives there smokes. So it smells horrendous in there. But once we go through and we clean it up, it's going to make an awesome starter home for somebody in the community. It's 5 bedrooms, 2.5 baths. We're going to do some great things to, you know, the kitchen and the bathrooms in there. So we're really excited about that project. And those are the types of projects I think we're going to try to target in 2024. Still look at for those value add multifamily deals, but also look for those shorter term projects that can put more cash in our pockets because they're shorter turnaround, they're shorter cycles. There's certainly the potential for big profits there. And then also demonstrating to another kind of type of investor within our network that, hey, we can deliver returns on short-term projects, long-term projects. So if you like the short-term project and you want to come on board for a long-term project, we'd love to have you type of thing. So that's kind of the way we're doing it. We're viewing real estate as a way to, yes, build our wealth, but we recognize there's people who want to just invest in diversified types of investments. You know, some people like to do crypto, stocks, bonds. Some people want to put in real estate, but they don't want to actually be the landlords themselves. So partnering with somebody like us, that's where the equity partners came through in our name, by the way. We kind of said like, partner with us, you know, you can give us the money. We'll put our money and our expertise into the deal. and we can all win. We can share the success, share the wealth. So that's kind of the way, that's kind of the way we were thinking when we founded Blue Canyon Equity Partners. And that's the way that it's been kind of panning out. So it's been really exciting to see that slow but steady growth and vision come true for the company.
When you talk about, you know, maybe a single family kind of flip project that you were mentioning, how many investors do you intend on bringing into a deal like that? Do you keep it pretty small, and or do you open it up to multiple investors?
There's definitely the possibility to open up to multiple investors, but to keep things really simple, what we try to do is try to find one or two, and for a smaller project like that, where we can realistically get the capital from just one or two people, that's what we prefer to do. I guess in theory, you could probably syndicate a flip. I'm sure you could bring in, maybe not even doing a syndication, you could bring in multiple people, but I do sense the more people you bring in, the more that it's going to start looking more like a security. And so that's where we're trying to be very mindful of what the laws are around this. So with one or two investors, like kind of like a joint venture type of situation where it's somebody who's going to be involved in the deal, they are interested in real estate. Maybe they're interested in growing their own portfolio, or they're interested in doing their own flips, but they're not quite ready to do something on their own yet. We're like a really good option for them, where we've got proven track record. We've got the operational expertise, and we can put the deal together, find a good deal, underwrite it, and then partner with them. And we kind of all win in that way. You know, we've got somebody to bring capital to the deal. We get to get the deal done. We get a disproportionate amount of returns relative to the amount of capital we put into it favorably, but it's good because we're getting paid for the work that we're doing. And then they get to learn and they get to make money. So that's the way we've been doing it. I would say like one or two investors for the kind of smaller projects. And then we probably would do more investors if they were bigger deals that required more capital.
Right. It's interesting. We have a syndication portfolio. It's all multifamily assets. And I've never thought about doing that with flips. We all just partner together on them and just kind of do them ourselves. That's an interesting concept of bringing in other investors to help them learn the business and the flip process itself, you know?
Yeah, I think that's kind of been like a very rewarding aspect of real estate investing that I was not on my mind at the front of all of this at the beginning of my investing career was, well, as I become more proficient in this, there's definitely opportunities to share my knowledge and to help others learn. And we can even learn together. You know, it might be something that I'm only a little familiar with, you're zero familiar with, but we do it together. And now we both become very familiar with it. Mm-hmm. So there's opportunities there. And then kind of like you were saying with the syndications, you know, you get that with the syndications, there's some upfront administrative costs. So sometimes it does need to be a bigger, more lucrative deal for it to really make sense for that type of investment on the administrative side of things. So sometimes that's why I would say like maybe a flip is probably not the best for that, but I guess it just depends. I mean, if the numbers could work, then why not?
Yeah.
No, I mean, my path to where I've been right now, right? So I'm at like 80, 85 units, something like that. It's been slower than I would have wished, but I also think that it's been strategic and it's been steady growth. So I'm like very happy with where I'm at, but I think like many, I'm my own worst self-critic. So I'm like, oh, you know, why couldn't I do this in 1 or 2 years rather than it's taken, you know, I'm like at 4 or 5 years now, but it's always about just making incremental progress. I'm a big believer in, what's that saying? It's like comparison is a thief of joy. So I try not to compare myself to others. Other people are going to have different momentum. I don't want others to compare themselves to me, but if there's something that I can learn from others, or if there's something that others can learn from me, like that's where I think there's value in the comparison. But other than that, like I try not to be too hard on myself. So we're doing slow but steady growth, and we're trying to make sure that we're doing everything legally and in compliance with all the laws. And we want to make sure that we're safe. You know, we have a fiduciary duty over, that's at least the way we think of it, but we certainly do have a fiduciary duty over the investors' funds that come into our deals. So we just want to make sure, like, you know, we're getting good projects that we feel really good about so that everybody's money is protected.
Well, and I like the way that you're talking about that too, because there's been plenty of GPs in the last couple of months, last 18 months, that maybe got a little over aggressive with some of their deals. And, you know, you hear all these stories about banks taking properties back and, you know, investors just losing everything that they put in with these people. And I'd rather have someone go a little bit slower and protect and make sure that capital is safe as an investor versus, you know, yeah, I might hit a home run on this deal, but I also might lose everything that I put into it. So I'd rather be a little bit more conservative with as a limited partner if I was on that side, you know?
No, absolutely. And it does happen, right? Like I do hear deals that go sour, and I hope if I'm ever a part of a deal like that, that it really was nothing that was in my control. It was something like purely in the marketplace. And hopefully like I wouldn't be the only investor suffering. There'd be like, maybe it's like a macro issue or something like that. But I don't want to ever find myself in that situation. So yeah, that's why we do the due diligence we do. That's why we underwrite the way we underwrite. And that's why we really try to choose deals that are aligned with the way the market's trending and the way, you know, the risks for a given moment or snapshot of the economy. So that's kind of the way we've been thinking about it. But we're going to still chug away like aggressively 2024. Like we've got a couple like projects that we really want to accomplish this year as a team together and bring on investors to help achieve it. And I'm going to be also big this year on like really producing educational content. So there's going to be, you know, I mentioned my social media handles and stuff like that, but like I've been trying to ramp that up, share a little bit more behind the scenes with the projects that we're doing. So, you know, I'm just trying to, I guess, share the knowledge, share the wealth.
Yeah. You guys going to start a podcast or do you have one?
I don't have a podcast. And you know, it's funny you asked that because I'm like, I think, right, could I produce some like good information or some good content with a podcast? Yes. And that helps build your brand. But I'm also like not trying to spread myself too thin. And I also am like, oh, like I know like a lot, there's a lot of, like you've got your podcast. It seems like a great podcast, by the way. But it's like, it takes a lot of work to get the traction that you're getting. It takes a lot of work to get the traction like some of those other big podcasts are getting. And it's like, I don't really know if that's where my heart and passion lies is in the podcast industry. So for that reason, I don't think it's like a good fit for me right now. But I definitely enjoy and I really do super appreciate you having me on as a guest. And if, you know, if you have any other podcasts or you know anybody that has similar real estate podcasts and they need guests, I'd be happy to get a referral because it's, you know, it's all part of building the brand, building the educational base that we're trying to produce this year. Yeah.
Well, Ryan, is there any other deals that you want to talk about or anything else you want to say about Blue Canyon Equity Partners?
Well, I will say we did start doing a newsletter this year. So if any of the followers are interested in kind of looking at some of the real estate content that I'm producing on my social media, you can follow me on Instagram and TikTok at Ryan R. Emrich. And then if you visit bluecanyonep.com, EP like equity partners, at the bottom of our website, there's a place where you can subscribe to our monthly newsletter. We do features of kind of news in the industry. We talk about projects we've been working on. We talk about upcoming projects that we are either have under contract or that we've been looking at. And again, it's very, very simple, very clean newsletter. We don't want to take up people's time. We value everybody's time. So it's a very usually easy 5-minute read, but it just keeps everybody up to date as to what the Blue Canyon team has been up to. And hopefully, you know, people will get some nice tidbits and nuggets of information from it.
And we'll definitely make sure that's in the show notes. Go check out bluecanyonep.com and connect with Ryan and the rest of the team there. Ryan, thanks so much for sharing about Blue Canyon and your career, how finance led to real estate. I'm excited to see what you guys do here in the next year and a half, 2 years.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, Trend. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Real Estate Professionals Investing Podcast on WIN, your community of investing knowledge for growth. We hope that this episode has increased your knowledge and added value to your path to freedom. If you would, please take a second to rate us so that we can get more great investors to interview. If you or someone that you know wants to be on, please visit westsideinvestors.com and fill out our form to be on the show. Thank you again and enjoy your day.